welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of continuing stories. We're on episodes 3 of Terry and the Pirates, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and right now, Adventures by Morse, with the third episode of City of the Dead, released for syndication for broadcast on January 22nd, 1944.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The City of the Dead, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
But first, your announcer. O'clock at night in October. The second night in the City of the Dead. Three men stand on the edge of a partly opened grave. A fourth stands in the grave itself, whispering, "I've struck something. Something awful." That was Jimmy Parker. The three men above him on the brink of the grave are Joshua Friday, mayor of the City of the Dead, otherwise known as the caretaker of the old cemetery. Dr. Tooner, now retired from practice, since he has buried his last patient here in the city. And third, Captain Friday, son of the mayor, a private investigator. A grave had been tampered with, and tonight it is being reopened officially to discover why. First, Captain Friday would dig, and then Jimmy Parker would dig, and it was Jimmy who uncovered the dead arm reaching up. There's something else you should know about Jimmy. He and his girlfriend, Phyllis Carroll, are virtual prisoners of the mayor, Doc Tooner, and Captain Friday. In fact, at the moment, Phyllis is locked in the bedroom assigned to her up at the mayor's bungalow just inside the cemetery gates. Jimmy and Phyllis themselves are under slight suspicion of grave robbing. But just now, Phyllis is locked up, and Jimmy is down in the grave with something horrible. Just as Parker whispered his discovery, there was a hair-raising wail from among the gravestones.
It disappeared, Captain Friday. You must have hit it.
I didn't hit anything. I fired into the air.
Dr. Tooner. Mayor Friday, everybody, I tell you, I've dug up something.
What's that? You're crazy, Parker. You won't hit the coffin under 4 or 5 feet.
I have struck something. It's an arm.
Jumping Jehoshaphat.
Are you lying, Parker? Let me turn my flash down in the hole.
I tell you. Hey!
Didn't you ever see a dead man before?
Let me out of here! Let me out of here!
Grab him, Doc!
You can't like that!
No!
You know, behave yourself!
Let me go! Let me get away from here!
You shouldn't have hit him so hard, Captain.
And when he comes to, he won't have any more hysteria than your grandmother.
Yeah, you're a tough customer, I'm afraid, my boy.
Sure, why not, Mayor? That's part of the game.
Yeah. Lay him out here on the grass. He'll be around presently.
Well, he wasn't far off. He struck something pretty ghastly, all right.
But, son, that ain't Ernie Martin's body.
Sure it isn't, Dad. Ernie died a natural death 20 years ago. This man was murdered last night.
Do you mean that, Captain?
You're a doctor, you should know. Here, take a look at his face.
Strangled. Strangled.
Not long ago, either, was it?
Not more than 24 hours.
Yeah. Here, hand me the shovel. I'll finish uncovering the body, and we'll take it up to the shed behind the cottage.
Did you recognize him, Doc?
No, I didn't, Mayor. It isn't anyone I ever saw before.
Wasn't Lammy Fink, then?
By jiggers, I never thought about him. Let's have another squint at that face, Captain.
I looked especially, Doctor. It isn't Lammy. Lammy has a deep scar at the roots of the hair on his forehead. There's none on this fella.
No wonder somebody ran by the cottage and out of the City of the Dead in hysterics last night.
You think maybe it was the murderer we heard, Captain?
No, not likely.
Why not?
Anyone with the courage to commit murder in a graveyard isn't likely to have a case of hysteria. Besides, anyone as frightened as that wouldn't have stopped to bury his victim and replant the turf on the grave.
Then where does the hysterical man fit in?
I don't know, but I can give a guess.
Let's have it, son.
Maybe some passerby who saw something he wasn't meant to see. Perhaps the murder. Ran out of the city of the dead, scared out of his wits.
Yeah, we don't have passerbys way off down here, son.
Well, we'll have to see. Yeah. Now, I think we can lift the body out. Here, doctor, can you reach the arms?
Yeah.
Good. Up we go. There it is.
Unhappy business.
You're not nervous, Dr. Tooney.
Yes, I am, Dad. Blame you, whatever.
No, it's perfectly okay with me, Doc. Dad, you got a stretcher around someplace, haven't you?
In the shed behind the house where you got the shovel.
I'll run up and get it. No fun carrying a body around in your arms. Keep an eye on young Parker.
Shall I fill in the grave while you're gone?
Don't touch anything. I want to examine that grave by daylight. You just wait around. I won't be long.
Say, Mayor, do you know what I think about this whole business?
No. How should I know what you think when I don't know what to think myself? Why in tarnation should anybody dig up one man's grave to shove another one in it?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I've got an idea that someone else has got onto the trail of what we've been after for years.
You think that's what's at the bottom of all this?
Yes, I do. Mayor, I told the captain all about this.
Then you broke your word, Doc Tudor. We promised to never say a word.
Well, it was necessary, Mayor. It was the only way I could make him keep Parker here and that Phyllis Carroll prisoners. Besides, he's your own flesh and blood.
He's that all right. Is he going to help us?
Well, he wouldn't promise. The only thing he agreed to was to hold the kids a week to find out whether they knew anything about how you came to be shot.
You think they know anything about the other?
Well, of course they do.
Think they were responsible for this killing?
Well, I don't know. The girl was mighty anxious to keep away from this grave tonight. The boy held out better, but you saw how hysterical he got. That looks suspicious.
So it does. So it does.
Still, they don't fit into the picture right. There's something more to it. They couldn't have rung that phantom church bell we've been hearing. Neither could one of them have been the claw-footed men that tromped on me in the old church. They were both locked up in the cottage at the time.
Could have friends helping them.
It looks like a gang, all right.
Looks like two gangs. Else why the murder?
Jupiter, Mayor, if they're out after the same thing we are and want it bad enough to commit murder...
Yes, I've been thinking about that.
Well, I'm not telling anyone I know anything.
You already shot off your mouth.
The claw-footed man again. Look. Look, see him, Mayor?
I'm going after him.
No, don't do it, Mayor. Don't do it. Look. Look how he bobs and floats among the graves.
Oh, let loose of me, Doc. Let loose. Come on, we can catch it.
Hey, we're getting everything. Do you hear that bell?
Save your breath. We're gaining on it. Run faster.
Well, why don't you shoot, Mayor? You got your pistol, haven't you?
Yeah. Yes, of course. I forgot all about it. I'll stop a minute and we'll take a crack at it.
Jumping Jupiter, Mayor. Where did it go?
I dropped it. That's what happened.
You know you didn't. You didn't fall. It just vanished.
Wait and see. Cut across the lawn here, but don't walk on the graves.
And it was right ahead. Here you are. Now where's your claw-footed man?
Probably just wounded him. Maybe he dragged himself off.
Well, we'd have seen him, I tell you. He just plain vanished.
I tell you, I dropped him.
All right,
hi,
but...
Hi, Dad. Doc, what's happened?
Listen.
Where are you? Hi, Doc Tooner.
There's the captain.
Hiya, Captain. Here we are. Coming.
Dad, all right?
Yep, he's all right.
Hey, where have you two been? Where's the body?
Body? What body, Captain?
A body we just dug up.
Look here, son. You ain't fooling us, are you?
Of course I'm not. You mean to tell me you don't know where it is?
Yeah, look here, Captain Friday. Let's get this straight. Ain't the body lying beside the grave where we left it?
It is not.
You're sure it's gone?
It's gone, all right. What have you two been up to?
We was chasing that clawfoot fella.
Well, he came right down here close by and let off a whole series of wails, so we took after him.
Got away, huh?
Yep, vanished when the mayor took a shot at him.
I hit him.
The mayor thinks he hit him, or it, or whatever it is. But it was gone when we got to the spot where it vanished.
And while you were out chasing ghosts, the strangled body got up and walked off. I thought I told you fellas to watch young Parker.
And what's happened to him?
He got up and walked off, too. Well, come on, let's go back to the grave.
Yeah? Did he take the body?
How should I know?
Then Parker got away?
He did not. As I came out of the shed with the stretcher, I heard a noise in the house. I peeked in the window and saw young Parker releasing Phyllis Carroll. Left the key in the door, didn't you?
Well, thought it'd be safe enough. What was the boy's idea?
Well, it looked as though they were trying to make a getaway.
Trying to run away. That looks bad for him, eh, Captain?
Ah, here's the grave. Still got the hole left, anyway.
Empty, all right. I wish we'd have caught that wailing critter. Might have solved everything.
Who ever heard of catching a decoy?
Decoy?
Sure, Dad. Looks like your wailing ghost wanted you to chase him. Wanted to get you out of the way.
But why?
Likely we weren't supposed to examine the corpse. Probably its identification would have solved the whole business.
Joe, I hadn't thought of that. Well, what's to be done?
We're going back to the house and see what Parker and Miss Carroll know. I've got him locked up in his room.
Miss Carroll, Captain Friday wants to see you in the living room.
What's happened?
Never mind. Go on into the other room. Come on out, Parker. The captain wants to see you.
What right's he got slugging me and locking me up this way, even if he is Captain Friday?
Well, you'd have gotten worse if you'd tried to make a break out of a jail. Now go on in the other room.
Well, we'll see about these high-handed methods.
So, come on in, Parker. Sit down.
You think you're pretty smart, cracking people on the jaw.
Don't sit there. Come over here, away from Miss Carroll.
Why shouldn't I sit by Phyllis?
Oh, please, Jimmy, do what he says.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better. Now then, Parker, what did you do with the body?
Body?
Yes, Miss Carroll, we found the body. Too bad, isn't it?
Body? What body?
The body somebody planted in old Ernie Morton's grave last night.
Oh, Jimmy.
We don't know anything about any body. Be careful, Phil. They're trying to frame you.
Oh, so we're trying to frame you, are we? Tell me something, Miss Carroll.
Yes?
Did you see Parker the day he got his job?
What job?
You know, the gardening job, Phil, over at the university.
Oh, that. Why, no. No, I didn't see him that day.
Let me see. What day was it he got this job?
Why...
No, look at me, Miss Carroll. Don't look at Parker. That's better. Now then, when did Jimmy tell you he got that gardening job?
Why, I've just forgotten. Sometime last week, I think.
He told you about getting the job, did he?
Oh, yes.
Well, Parker. So you told Miss Carroll about the job last week, huh?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, then I'll explain. Didn't you tell me you got that job 2 days ago?
Yes.
Then how could you have told Miss Carroll about it last week? This is Saturday. That would have been at least a week ago.
What about it?
Oh, come on now. Admit it. You haven't got a gardening job and you never had one. Isn't that the truth?
Well...
Answer me. You haven't a job, have you?
No.
Then how did you get those fresh blisters on your hands?
Oh, Jimmy, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, Phil. It wasn't your fault.
Never mind, Miss Carroll. Answer me, Parker. How did you get those blisters?
I was...
You got them opening a grave, now, didn't you?
How can you even think of such a thing?
Answer me, Parker.
It's none of your business.
None of my business whether you go about strangling folks...
Oh, he didn't. He didn't kill anyone. Oh, Jimmy, tell them the truth.
The truth? Phyllis, what are you talking about?
Yes, Miss Carroll. What are you talking about?
Well, I've been so upset by all this. Oh, Jimmy, I want to go home.
Oh-ho, so Jimmy Parker and Phyllis Carroll are up to their chins in this after all. But what are a good-looking young woman and a college boy doing mixed up with grave robbing and murder? But more in just a moment.
Dr. Tuna, take Miss Carroll to her room and see if you can quiet her.
Yeah, Miss Carroll. You'll feel better after a good night's rest.
Now then, Parker, let's have the truth.
I haven't anything to say.
I'd guess you have plenty to say. You lied about the blisters. You tried to escape after we discovered a murder victim in Ernie Morton's grave. And on top of that, now the body has vanished. You've got a lot of explaining to do.
I tell you, I don't know anything.
Phyllis urged you to tell the truth. What was she talking about?
She was scared. She didn't know what she was saying.
She did know what she was saying. What did she mean?
I don't know.
Yeah. Why did you try to escape after you saw the body?
I wasn't going to stay here and be beaten up by you.
That wasn't the reason. Something about that body terrified you. Now, what was it?
It was just a dead body. Never saw a murdered man before.
That wasn't it. Something about that body got under your skin. Did you murder that man?
No, I swear I didn't. I swear it.
Did you recognize the body?
No, of course I didn't recognize it.
Yes, you did, Parker. The moment you saw that face, you let out a yell.
Oh, please, Captain Friday, please let us go. Don't you understand? Can't you see?
Can't I see what?
The same thing will happen to all of us if you keep us here. We'll all be murdered.
How do you figure that out?
I know it. I know it.
Wouldn't you be in just as much danger if I let you go?
Oh, no, really. The danger's here, Captain. The danger's in the City of the Dead.
What do you mean by that? What danger?
A murderer.
What murderer?
There's someone in the City of the Dead that intends to kill everyone who knows...
Who knows what?
I can't tell. I couldn't if I wanted to.
How long have you known of this murderer?
Since I saw the body.
Then you did recognize it?
Yes.
Who was it?
I can't tell you.
Now, look here, Parker. If you are in as much danger as you say you are, I should think you and Miss Carroll would want protection.
But it isn't only us. Don't you understand? You're in danger, too. So is the mayor and Dr. Tooner.
What's that?
I tell you, it's true. They won't stop at anything.
They? Is it a gang?
No. No, I don't know.
Huh. So you won't talk to save your own life?
No.
Isn't there anything that would make you talk?
Will you let me talk alone with Phyllis for a little?
Then will you tell us what we want to know?
If she's willing.
But she's already begged you to tell.
She doesn't know all I know.
Oh, I see. In other words, you want to tell her the name of the murdered man.
I didn't say that.
Mm-hmm. Very well, I'll let you talk to her. Hey, Doctor.
Yes, Captain?
I'm going to send Parker in to see Phyllis. Is she all right?
Oh, sure. She's all right. I gave her a powder. You want her to come out?
No, I'm giving Parker here 5 minutes with her alone. Go on in, Parker.
Yes, sir.
Let him shut the door, Doctor. It's just 5 of 10. You got till 10 o'clock.
Yeah, right in here, son.
Okay.
Oh, Jimmy, what's it all about? How did we get into all this trouble?
Look here, Phyllis. We've got to face it. There's something horrible going on in this place.
But you said it would be all right. You said all we'd have to do would be to come down here and dig the...
Shh, be careful, Phil. They may be listening.
But why do we have to be careful? Why don't you tell everything?
Phyllis, do you know who that was we dug up tonight?
You mean the body?
Yes.
Oh, please. It wasn't anyone I know.
It was, Phil. I'm sorry.
Oh, Jimmy, who was it?
It was your cousin, Bert Arnold.
Oh, no, Jimmy.
Please, don't cry, Phyllis. I'm awfully sorry, but you just had to know.
Oh, but I just saw Bert yesterday. Who would want to kill Bert, Jimmy?
Look here, Phil. I think Bert was down here for the same reason we came.
Oh, but how did he know? I thought I was the only one who knew.
I don't know how he found out, but it looks to me like he did know and someone killed him while he was nosing around down here.
Oh, Jimmy, this is awful. Awful. What are we going to do?
I don't know. Whoever killed Bert is probably out after us, too.
Oh, Jimmy, don't say that.
You might as well face it. Have you any idea who it could be?
Oh, no. No.
Any relatives?
Well, Mother's the only relative I've got, besides Bert.
Any distant relative that might have found out something in some way?
Oh, I don't know. No one I know of. Oh, please, why can't we tell Captain Friday all about it?
What do you suppose he's going to think if we tell him what we came down here for... And then told him the murdered man was your cousin.
Oh, I don't know.
I do. He'd think we killed him.
Oh, but we didn't. We didn't.
Of course not, but... Well, if you want me to tell...
Not if they'll think we killed him.
Well, they will. You can count on that.
Well, then we mustn't tell. We mustn't. Oh, I don't know what I'll tell Mother.
I'll be lucky not to get kicked out of the university for this. Oh, shh, listen.
Come on out, Parker. Time's up.
You won't tell... You won't tell, will you, Jimmy?
No, Phyllis, but listen. If you hear anyone trying to get into your room, yell. Don't wait a minute, do you understand?
Oh, well, do you think...
Come on out of there, Parker.
Coming. Remember what I say, Phyllis. Don't take any chances. Good night, Phil.
Be careful, Jimmy.
Sure. Well, here I am.
Yeah. You ready to talk?
No.
Oh, it's that way, huh?
Yeah, that way.
Then go on into your room. But let me tell you this, Parker. If you don't come through with me, and mighty soon, I'll take you into San Francisco and throw you to the cops. You'll be only too glad to talk. Now go on to bed and think it over.
Did you lock both doors, Captain?
Right. And I'm keeping the keys to both Parker's and Miss Carroll's rooms with me. Is there any more keys to those two bedrooms, Mayor?
No, those are all, son.
Well, it's 10:15. I'm turning in. It's going to be heavy work from now on.
But, Captain, do you think we might be in any danger? After all, a man has been murdered here.
Who can tell where danger is? Doc, you and the mayor double up in the big bed in the front room. I'm going to make myself comfortable here on the lounge beside the fire.
Now, look here, son. You won't be comfortable there.
Do what I say, Dad. I'm going to boss things around here for a while.
Young jackanapes, turn you across my knee.
Good night. Sound.
What do you want?
Get dressed as fast as you can. There's something hanging around outside the house.
Hey, are you sure?
Yeah, of course. Hurry.
Is Phyllis all right?
Yeah, I made sure of it. Everyone's asleep.
What are we going to do?
Find out who it is.
Isn't it a man?
Well, if it is, he certainly got himself rigged out.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
Well, by moonlight, it looks like a cross between the headless horseman and one of Shakespeare's witches. Come on, fella. Aren't you almost ready?
Just a minute. One more shoe.
Oh, here it is. Get into it.
Oh, thanks. Why are you ringing me in on this detective business? I thought I was a prisoner.
If this fellow's hanging around for a chance to murder you, as you seem to believe, I just thought I'd give him a chance at you.
You don't really mean that.
How do you know what I mean? All right. Hang right on my coattail and you won't be in any danger even if this fella is after you. Come on.
All right.
He seems to be patrolling around the house. We'll watch here at the window until we spot him, then we'll slip outside and lay for him.
Where did you see him?
I watched him circle the house twice. Look, there he comes.
Yeah. Hey, what is it?
Can you see his face, Parker? Look sharp.
Yeah, long hair strangling down all over his face. Hey, look, it's crouching down.
Looks like an animal that scents its prey.
Look in the shadow there. There's something else moving. It's coming out in the moonlight.
A man. He's coming toward the house.
He doesn't see that crouching thing.
Hello. Fella's going around to the back of the house.
The thing's following him. He doesn't see it.
There they go around the corner. Come on, we gotta see the end of this. Easy now. There. Leave the door on the latch so that we can get back in fast if we have to. Mm-hmm. Follow close. Just a minute. Here, let me take a peek around the corner. It's all in shadow. I can't see a thing. We'll have to take a chance. Come on. Softly. Hold it. I'll give a look around this corner. Now we'll get some moonlight in the back of the house.
See anything?
Wait. Look at that, Parker.
What's happening?
Somebody's working on the bars to your window.
The murderer, I told you.
Yeah, but where's our pet ghost? He seems to have vanished.
Look, the man's cutting the bars.
We'll put a stop to that right now. But I hate like the deuce to make a move in the open until I know what's become of our long-haired phantom.
Maybe the thing spotted us.
Well, you keep a lookout behind. There it is. Keep down.
Where? I don't see it.
Crouched in that shadow right behind the man. He doesn't know it's there.
I wouldn't have that thing.
Oh! Look out, it's killing him. It's killing him.
Don't let
him
get away.
I missed. It's gone. Quick, run for Dr. Turner while I see if the fellow's still alive.
Yeah, but I
do what I tell you. Run.
Dr. Turner.
Hey, what's your matter? Who is that? What's your matter?
Is that you, Doctor? Another man's been murdered. Captain Friday wants you.
Where is he?
Back in the cottage. Come on, I'll show you. All right, around this way.
Who's been killed?
I don't know. All I know is somebody's been murdered.
Not so fast, boy. Give an old man a break.
Right down here, you can see the body in the moonlight. Hurry. Hurry, Doc. Here.
Yeah. Here's the body. But where's Captain Friday?
Maybe chasing the phantom. I don't know. Here, let's turn this fellow over on his back. See if he's still alive.
Take it easy now. What do you mean, boy? This body is Captain Friday.
Captain Friday? And where's the other body?
You have just heard Chapter 3 of City of the Dead. Why is it a corpse in the City of the Dead vanishes almost as quickly as it is made? Why is this phantom creature haunting the vicinity of the caretaker's cottage? And what's happened to Captain Friday? All this will unfold next week in the fourth episode of City of the Dead, entitled Old Clawfoot Again.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned to Yesterday, Episode 3 of City of the Dead, which we'll pick up next week at the same time. That was released on January 22nd, 1944. And you're listening to an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We move on now to Episode 37, technically, but the third since we started, of Terry and the Pirates. This produced by WGN Chicago and was heard on November 25th, 1941.
Terry and the Pirates. You know, it's a funny thing about Terry and his pals. They can get into more exciting spots and battle their way out and have more fun doing it than anybody you ever knew. Yes, they use their heads and their fists, and they laugh and fight in every one of these thrilling transcribed adventures. And if you want your share of the nation's number one radio show, then here it is. Terry and the Pirates is brought to you by the makers of Libby's Pineapple Juice, one of Libby's 100 famous foods. Just supposing, boys and girls, that somebody was to tell you this. Suppose they said you could get a Terryscope, exactly like the one Terry has in the show, and a decoder that showed you how to use Connie and Big Stoop's secret Chinese code, and how to flash messages at night. And along with all that, you got a game board and directions for playing two swell games. And suppose they said the whole thing, the Terryscope with its eight super special features, all of it, was being offered for just 10 cents and two labels. You'd jump at the chance to get one, I'll bet. Well, kids, that's exactly what I'm here to tell you now. All those things. The Terryscope, just like the one in the show, and the secret codes and games and special tricks, they're all yours for only 10 cents and two Libby's labels. Yes, Libby has made it possible for you to get this unique, exciting Terryscope, and if you're smart, you'll get yours right away. The labels you need come from two of the world's grandest tasting juices, Libby's tomato juice and Libby's pineapple juice from Hawaii. They're juices your mother will be glad to get because they're refreshing and delicious, and they give you important vitamins. So ask her right away to get them, a can of Libby's tomato juice and one of Libby's pineapple juice. Take the labels off, and on one of them, print your full name and address and give your age. Then mail these labels along with a 10-cent coin to Terry in care of Libby's, Chicago, Illinois. Now, you know how to spell Libby's. It's L-I-B-B-Y-S. Well, kids, you get these labels and get them in the mail with your dime, and the next thing you know, you'll be having the thrill of a lifetime. Yes, sir, when the mailman brings your Terryscope, you'll say it's a red-letter day. Gosh, but this Terryscope is a beauty. It's got a shiny lacquer finish, and it's decorated with Chinese characters and a big dragon and pictures of the dragon lady and Pat and other friends of yours. And then you'll see the secret code panel and the treasure hunt panel. And boy, will you get a laugh when you see what you can do with a picture of good old Stupor. Well, all that's just a hint of what's waiting for you kids. So hurry up and get your order in. Send your full name, address, and age, along with 10 cents and two Libby's labels, one from tomato juice and one from Libby's pineapple juice. Mail them to Terry in care of Libby's, Chicago, Illinois. And now, Terry and the Pirates. Free of a dragon lady at last. Or are they? That's the big question in the minds of Terry Lee, Pat Ryan, and Connie as they speed along a narrow mountain road toward the ancient Chinese city of Chungking. They have recovered the precious portable radio transmitter, and it is now close beside Terry. Pat Ryan is driving the car, a car taken from Mr. Keel, and a loudmouthed singa-singa. Remember how Pat battled with Keel beside the hay wagon back there on the road? Boy, that was a scrap and ended with victory for Ryan. Well, at the speed they're going, they'll soon be in Chungking, where they expect to meet Jude Hennick, the beautiful Burma, the wide-eyed April Kane. We're going to meet these three people, too. So let's step on ahead to a small hotel, to a room in this Chungking Hotel, where we hear...
There's where the cotton is. Oh, dear. I'm worried. I'm positively out of my mind.
Out of your what?
My mind. You know, what I think with.
Well, don't let it bother you, dear. I've been out of my mind for years. And look at me.
Yes, you're beautiful.
All right, April.
We've been here for a day and a night, and we don't know what's happened to Terry or Mr. Ryan or Connie or Big Stoop or anybody. Doesn't that worry you?
Well, to be truthful, it does.
I wonder if they got that radio thing from the Dragon Lady.
Yeah, I wonder. Well, we'll know soon enough. After all, Chickadee, it was just as well we flew away from Utong with Jude Hennick and his plane. You and I wouldn't have been of any help. We'd be as useless as an umbrella to a fish.
Why would a fish use an umbrella?
That's what I'm telling you.
Oh. Carry me back to old Virginia. I'm worried about Mr. Hennick, too.
Oh, that black-haired pilot can take care of himself.
Yes, but where is he? He told us not to go wandering around Chungking without him.
And for a very good reason, April.
What is it, Burma?
Well, now, look, I'll tell you again. We don't want too many people knowing we're here. The Dragon Lady has friends in this town.
But we haven't got that old radio thingamajig.
I know, but that won't stop a few of the ladies' pirates from making us very uncomfortable for a while.
Then why is Mr. Hennick outside someplace doing something?
He went to the flying field to check over the plane. He hopes to fly us back to Singapore.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Carry me back to old Virginia. Well, then, I guess I haven't anything to worry about, have I? I mean, except what's happened to Terry and Mr. Ryan.
Oh, that's right. Nothing to worry about at all. Oh, don't forget, Dude calls up here every hour just to make sure we're okay. Now, if I were you, Now, who could that... Yeah? Who is it?
Don't open the door unless it's Mr. Hennick, and he always signals by knocking special.
Shh. Who's there?
It is so. I have a message for you, occupant of this room.
What'd he say? A message?
What kind of a message?
It is well that we discuss it other than with a door between us. Mm-hmm.
Just a moment. Yeah. I'll just slip this gun Dude gave me under the cushion of this chair.
Oh, dear. I wish I had that telescope here. I could look right up over that transom and see who's out there in the hall.
Well, you haven't got the telescope, so just sit where you are and look pleasant. Just a moment. Well?
I wish to have word for Miss April Kane.
What about?
As you can see, I represent a branch of the military service.
Yeah, you have a uniform.
I have been delegated by my superiors to treat for Miss Kane, and I presume yourself that you represent her. May I enter?
Well, all right. Step in.
Thank you. I am General Chang. You wish to see my credentials?
Well, General...
This could only be Miss Kane, yes?
Yes, how do you do, General? My, what a pretty uniform. And you speak English very well, too. Like I always
April.
Say to...
Mr. Chang is here on business, I presume?
That is correct. I shall be brief. May I sit down?
Oh, yes, please do, General.
Thank you. At the airport, I met my good friend, Mr. Hennick.
Oh, did you see Dude Hennick? Isn't he wonderful?
Let the General talk, April. You said you saw him at the airport?
That is correct. He told me about a certain radio invention. I need not mention it by name again.
Oh, yes, we know.
Well, naturally, on behalf of my superiors, I am most anxious to secure it.
Oh, but didn't Mr. Hennick tell you that we didn't...
Please, April. General Chang, just what did Mr. Hennick tell you?
Very little. You see, I have known for some time that there was a certain portable... transmitter available for use in army communication. I knew that Mr. Hennick was trying to get it for us. So at the airport, I told him I was most eager to complete the transaction.
Well, what do you want of us?
It is very simple, madame. I want to buy the invention.
But how can you buy it when we...
April, please. Why don't you act like Big Stoop?
But Burma, Big Stoop can't talk.
That's what I mean. Now, General, let me understand you. You want to buy the invention now?
That is correct.
And you want to walk out of it with it under your arm?
Precisely. You have no fear. There are three men ready to help me guard the instrument. They can be trusted.
No doubt. But have you ever heard of the Dragon Lady?
Oh, the Dragon Lady? Most fantastic name. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. A woman bandit leader, I believe.
Yeah.
I seem to have heard of her. Amazing person.
Yeah, women are not always as smart as she is.
But I am sure you are able to think and act for yourself, madame.
That remains to be seen.
It is late, so if we get this business completed, I have a check. You should deal in your American dollars. Miss Kane, you have said price on...
Well, this is so sudden, General.
But the time has come for action, Miss Kane.
Has it? Oh, dear.
General, I want a straight answer to this. Did Mr. Hennig tell you we had that little radio box up here in this room?
I came here to make reasonable offer.
That's not the answer I want.
You are a difficult woman to deal with, madam.
As difficult as the Dragon Lady?
You speak in riddles.
And you don't get straight answers, Mr. Chang.
Did it ever occur to you that you are both at a disadvantage at the moment?
That sounds like a threat.
Sometime extreme measures are necessary to accomplish our ends.
Perhaps you'd like to take Miss Kane and myself to Army headquarters, General. Is that what you mean by extreme measures?
I am here in this room. I represent authority. My word is law, and if necessary, I shall...
Oh! Oh, dear. That phone bell made me jump.
I'll answer it. Yeah? Well, that's just ducky. Yeah, and by the by, do you remember a little talk we had a few hours ago about phonies? Uh-huh. Well, look, pretend you're a Marine or Paul Revere or something, will you? Huh? Oh, no, no, no. It's 2 for 3, and I'm having a wonderful time, and I wish you were here. Drop in sometime, Prudence. We'll catch up on our gossip. Bye.
Who's that, Berman?
Oh, just an old friend.
But do you know anybody by the name of Prudence?
You'd be surprised, April. Now, Mr. Chang, I have a suggestion.
We have little time for talk, Madame Burma.
I realize that. Now, General Chang, you just sit right where you are and don't move.
Oh, dear, don't shoot him, Burma.
I won't unless he gets...
Do you realize what you're doing?
Not quite, but I'll do something pretty sad to you if you move out of that chair.
But he's a general.
Generals die in chairs.
Madame, you don't realize what you're doing.
Perhaps not. But our mutual friend, Mr. Hennig, just phoned me. He does that every hour or so just to make sure we're all right. He understood what I said just now. He'll use prudence in coming up here. He'll avoid the lobby. I want him to meet his good friend, General Chang. So, just sit very, very still and wait.
Well, Burma may do a lot of wisecracking, but she does a lot of quick thinking, too. And she has plenty of good American nerve. In a little while, Jude Hennig will show up. Well, what's your guess about Chang, the uniformed general? Do you think he's the real thing or one of the Dragon Lady's men? Well, tomorrow we'll see what happens to Jude. Yes, and we may see how Terry and his Terryscope help out in a dangerous situation.
Terry and the Pirates on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of November, 1941, broadcast on WGN Chicago. That was broadcast in the 5 o'clock hour, which was a great listening hour for kids in Chicago at that time. On the same station, it began with Little Orphan Annie. Then after Terry and the Pirates, Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, and Captain Midnight at 5:45. And we close this hour of continuing stories with Episode 3 of The McCormack Matter on yours truly, Johnny Deller, broadcast on CBS on October 5th, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Deller.
This is Dules Martin.
Lieutenant Martin?
Yeah, that's right. I got a message you called while I was out and left this number.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the McCormack case, Lieutenant.
McCormack?
$100,000 burglary out on Long Island back in 1951.
I was the officer in charge. Who are you?
Insurance investigator. I got a tip that an ex-convict named Joe Panny might have pulled it. I'm at Panny's hotel.
Well, let me know how you make out.
Say, listen, his room's been torn apart. Every inch of it's been searched. And when I came here tonight, I got socked by a woman with a gun.
Give me that address.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Expense account, item 7, $2, two drinks. For myself and Lieutenant Dules Martin, NYPD. A big, swarthy man who seemed to know what he was about. Martin looked over the damage done by the unknown ransacker of Joe Panny's room, questioned the clerk, who was unable to furnish any helpful information. Then, because Joe Panny was officially a parole violator, ordered a general pickup.
They should be able to get our hands on him pretty soon, Dollar.
I hope it's that easy, Lieutenant.
Any reason why it shouldn't be fairly routine?
No, just a feeling, I guess. I don't know. This whole matter has been flimsy. The tip was weak, but it seems to be paying off. Nothing fits, though.
I don't quite get all this, Dollar. How'd you come in on this?
Old Mike Cairn died up at Sing Sing 2 days ago. Before he went, he told me he believed Joe Panny might have pulled a McCormick burglary. It didn't seem likely then, Panny being a small-time auto thief and whatnot. But now it does, in view of what's been happening lately.
Somebody sure wants something Panny might have, judging from that room.
I never saw one taken apart better, an expert search job.
Yeah.
Hey, Lieutenant, when you pick Joe Panny up, I'd like to be in on it. He's my only lead in this case, and I want to talk to him again.
And that's not asking too much. Now, Dollar, about this woman you saw.
Pretty, about 30, dark hair, good dresser, wore a silver mink stole. The gun she socked me with was a little one, a 25 or maybe 32 automatic.
Mm-hmm. You think she might have done the searching in Joe's room?
What do you think? She was flustered and upset when I bumped into her, anxious to get away from the place. And, of course, the gun in her hand.
Yeah.
She sound familiar to you in this neighborhood?
No, no. Could be anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's about it, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
No, I got it.
Oh, thanks. I suppose you talked to McCormick, got the full story of the burglary from him.
Almost first thing, yeah.
Well, I remember him when it first happened. Nice enough, but strange, I thought. This business about somebody phoning the parole office ahead of you to get Joe Panny's address that stops me, though.
Well, that's hard to figure.
You sure you're telling me everything?
Sure, I'm sure.
That part sounds crazy.
Not if somebody knew I was looking for him, wanted to get him first.
Yeah, but who?
How should I know?
Well, we'll see what we will see. Can I drop you anywhere?
No, thanks. I'll walk. You let me know when you pick him up.
Sure.
Two days passed, and I didn't hear from Lieutenant Martin. I finally phoned in, and a supplementary had turned up no leads. Martin had men watching Joe's hotel. His former friends and acquaintances were being checked. Meanwhile, I decided to try and find out who the dark woman in the first stole had been. It seemed pretty obvious that she had just come from Joe's room, that she knew him or was connected with him in some way. So once more, I combed over Joe Panny's file at headquarters, this time looking for a woman's name. The only one mentioned was an ex-wife who had divorced him 6 years before. Her name was Iris Carter. At the Bureau of Vital Statistics, the marriage certificate and record of divorce proceedings gave me a composite picture of an unhappy and turbulent 3-year marriage. It also gave me a general description of Iris Carter that could very well fit the woman I'd seen briefly in the hallway outside Joe Panny's hotel room. There was a 6-year-old address to start on. No, ma'am, I'm not Eunice.
Oh, no, you sure ain't. You seen her?
I don't know. I really don't know her.
Oh. Well, what do you want?
I'd like to talk to the manager. I want some information.
What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
What kind of information are you looking for?
Are you the manager?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, I'm trying to locate a woman named Iris Carter. She might have used the name Iris Panny. She was married once to a man named Joe Panny. Lived here about 6 years ago. Were you here then?
I was.
Did you know her?
I did.
Did you know him?
Yeah. He went to jail.
Does she live here now?
She don't.
Do you have any idea where I can find her?
I don't.
Well, do you happen to know if she ever
Why
worked
do you want
or...
her?
Just to talk to her. When did she move out?
Oh, long time ago. 5 years, maybe.
Uh-huh.
What's your business?
Insurance.
Oh.
Well, what's up?
Oh, nobody around here buys insurance.
Well, we don't have to go into that. If you can think of any place I might get a line on her, I'd appreciate it.
It seems to me she worked at a bookstore down the street.
Down what street?
Out there. Block or two down that way. I think she worked there. I don't know. You can try.
Thank you. I will.
Why, you polite. You tip your hat.
So tell me, do you remember what she looked like?
Sort of. Yeah.
Well?
Oh, about as tall as I am. Nice. Pretty girl.
Blonde or brunette?
Dark hair. Almost black.
Know any of her friends when she lived here?
No. No, I couldn't tell you that. Why?
Oh, I might look up one of them and ask her about her, that's all.
Yeah, you ask at that bookstore. I think she worked there.
The bookstore Iris Carter Panny had worked in was as dismal as the neighborhood. The proprietor, a Mrs. Olds, yielded a little more helpful information than Iris Carter's former landlady. Yes, Iris had worked there for about 6 months. She'd quit almost 5 years before. No, she didn't know where to find her. Expense account, item 8, $1.02, lunch. I had it in a neighborhood diner called the Showboat, a place where Mrs. Olds said Iris Carter had frequently eaten. The restaurant manager remembered Iris vaguely. She also remembered Iris's boyfriend. I asked for a description. She did better than that. She gave me his name, occupation, and address. An old rehearsal hall 2 blocks away. The five-man combo working there was really putting it out. Yeah. And the minute I saw him, I knew the boy wearing the trumpet was the one I was looking for. Just good-looking and smooth enough to go with a girl Iris Carter sounded like. Smooth trumpet, too.
Okay, guys. Take five.
I'm looking for Jack Lang.
You found him.
I'm Johnny Dollar. Could we talk a minute?
That's about all I got, Mr. Dollar. Want to smoke?
No, thanks.
Oh, man. Gets real tired out about this time of day.
Yeah, imagine it does, the way you put it out.
Well, everybody to his own racket. What's yours?
Insurance investigating.
Okay. Now what?
Well, I've been asking around the neighborhood, and they tell me you once knew a girl named Iris Carter, or Iris Panny.
Iris Carter. Go on.
I'd like to find her and talk to her, and I thought you might be able to help me.
Go on.
I want to talk to her ex-husband, most of all. I thought somehow she might know where to find him these days.
He's in the can.
He was released 3 weeks ago.
No.
Any ideas?
No.
I thought finding her might be a shortcut to him.
I wouldn't think so. They were all washed up when I knew her.
When was that?
5 years ago. She hadn't seen him for over a year then.
Uh-huh.
She didn't have much use for him. I don't blame her.
How long did you know her?
No. We went together for a while she worked at some crummy bookstore. Then she moved away, and I didn't see her after that. I think she said something about going back to Ohio.
You think?
I don't remember offhand.
Well, let me put it this way. As far as I know, she's in no trouble. The one we want is her ex-husband. You'd be helping a lot if you could tell me where to find her.
I don't know. I honestly don't know, and I sure wish I did. I'd like to find her myself.
Why?
Well, when she went with me, wasn't any good. I think she just walked out because she was tired of losers. Sick up to here, you know what I mean? Can't blame her. He gave her a pretty bad time. I didn't do much better. But now I got something. It's just a little five-piece outfit. Not much, but something. I'd like to show it to her and say, Iris, this is mine.
You kind of had it bad, huh?
Bad as a guy like me can get it. I know I'll probably never see her again as long as I live, but boy, if another one like her ever shows up, I'm going to be ready, Dad. Ever see her?
No, she must have been something.
Here. Take a look. Nice, huh?
Yeah. I take it back.
What back?
About seeing her. I've seen her.
When? Where?
2 nights ago in the hallway outside Joe Panny's room.
You sure?
I'm sure. She hit me with a gun before she left. The picture he had flipped out of his wallet was old and well thumbed. It showed a sultry kind of face that could have been 20 or 30 or 40. A wide, frank, smiling, happy mouth. Not the kind of girl I would imagine could ever be married to a Joe Panny. But there was no doubt about it. She had been married to him, and I had seen her. On my way back to the hotel, I dropped in to check with Lieutenant Martin.
Hi.
Hi.
Doing any good? Any lead on Joe Penny?
Nothing so far. This may take longer than I thought at first.
Well, I've been out looking for his ex-wife. I didn't find her, but I found a few people who knew her. She was the one at his hotel the other night. Name's Iris Carter.
You sure?
Positive. I saw her picture.
We better try to pick her up, too. I'll put it out right away.
Fine. Well, I'll keep in touch.
Wait a minute. Don't go.
Huh?
We had some action here today. Sit down.
Thanks.
Julian McCormick called up, reported you. He said you came out there bothering him a couple days ago. He said he doesn't want to be bothered.
Well, I only talked to him to get his story on the burglary.
And I told him as long as you didn't break the law, there was nothing we could do to stop you from investigating. But he didn't like it.
He seemed perfectly willing to cooperate with me when I talked to him before.
Yeah, well, sometime these rich... Excuse me. Martin here. That's right. Well, how long ago? Okay. Well, they found your boy, Joe Penny.
What?
Yeah. He's on his way to the morgue. Harbor Patrol picked up his body a couple of hours ago, loaded down with slugs.
Some case.
And that ain't all, Johnny.
Huh?
His feet were burnt.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, a phase of this case that ought to be called the Talking Corpse. For believe me, this one said plenty. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. On Tuned to Yesterday from October 5th, 1955 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time at the very same time where we'll pick up on these exciting stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.